I'm Thomas Law, the Executive Director of TSIA. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. So at TSIA, we've been chipping on a framework we call the Model-Driven Revenue Engine. The idea is pretty simple, but it's hard to do. Instead of running your revenue function as a stack of workflows, your CRM fields, your pipeline reviews, your Friday forecast call, you run it off a set of AI models that watch every customer touch point in real time and tell you where the value is, where the risk is, and who's actually ready to buy. We even gave the monitoring piece a name, Radar, Real-Time Adoption Detection and Risk Alerting. The whole bet is that the machine optimizes toward the outcome, the deal, the renewal, the revenue, not toward whether somebody remembered to update a field. This is a big shift in thinking. My guest today has basically been living inside that shift for 30 years. Stephen Messer co-founded Linkshare in the 90s. He more or less co-invented affiliate marketing. He sits on the board of Spire Global. And then he goes and builds Collective Eye, which the Wall Street Journal ended up calling the Waze for sales. One AI brain trained on how buyers across thousands of companies and hundreds of thousands of deals actually behave, thinking about every deal for every rep at the same time. His whole thesis is that for three decades, B2B sales built increasingly fancy instruments to study the seller, the one person in the room who doesn't make the decision. He wants to turn that around and get it focused on buyer. So with that, let's get the insight engine humming here. Stephen, it's great to meet you in person. Welcome to Tectonic. And I'm going to start right out of the gate here. We're going to go all the way back in time here. When did you first start to feel that B2B companies were actually focused on the wrong thing here? That they got it wrong in terms of how they were approaching sales? When did that light bulb go off?
So first of all, Thomas, it's so great to be here with you. You and your organization are so critical to understanding a changing world. And it feels like the amount of disruption that's been happening around technology is getting faster and harder. And so I'm excited to spend some time with you and your audience to do what you do best, which is help them understand this change. So you asked the question, when did I understand it changed? Look, I have been in business since I was 9. My father passed away at a very young age, and both my sister, who's my co-founder, and I found ourselves working in the family business. And we would sit around the table every single week talking about, do we have enough money for next week? Can we make payroll? And so when you live that life, revenue is more than a quota. It's more than, did we beat our goal? It's about people's lives. And we started our first company right out of law school. We started a company called Linkshare. And Linkshare was really about commission-based selling. It's affiliate marketing, which is commission-based selling across the web. And what we learned was we can enable opportunities for people to sell almost everything. Today, it's called the influencer economy. Back then, it was just affiliates. And that was a huge improvement. And what we changed was, why do I have to negotiate with, I don't know, Disney for 2 years to get a deal so I can sell their stuff? Why can't I just show them I can do it or not? And if the risk is on me as a commission-based seller, why should they care? And it turned out we were right. And that was a big change in the way people operated. When we looked at Collective Eye 10 years ago, I think we asked the question, with all the systems and everything we had ever used to build businesses across not just Linkshare, but every investment I had made, revenue was the pain that no one could understand. And for us, we had this sort of heliocentric view of the world, which is everybody had thought that the rest of the universe revolved around the earth. Sales, it was, we can sell anything. Glenn Clarigan Ross, right? You pick your movie that everybody spent their lives following. And it was always about somehow magically, the seller could convince somebody to do something that they didn't want to do originally. Don Draper, right? He would get you to buy into an ad campaign that no one else could see. He was the greatest seller. That's not sales. That's great TV. That's great movies. Sales is about trust. Sales isn't about relationships. But in a digital world, most of our customers are doing research without us. they're really looking for something different from us. Mm-hmm. They're looking for the things they need to do to buy. And buying processes are vastly different than 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. There are entire committees where there used to be an individual who bought before. And so I think when we looked and we asked the question, why is it that over the last 15 years, as we've bought more technology, as we've layered more and more things on, as we've put in SDRs, we've literally changed everything we do. The only consistent thing over the last 15 years is worsening results. And I'm not talking about minor. I'm talking about dramatic. Yeah, sales lowest. Today, we had the lowest number of people hitting quota, and quota has not gone up. Everyone always thinks, oh, no, it's gone up. No, if you look at the last 10 years, for an enterprise seller, the quota was around, 10 years ago, was around 1 to 1.2 million per year. Yeah. You know what that quota is today?
It's about the same, I'm going to guess.
It's almost identical, except for the fact that we've had inflation. Mm-hmm. We've spent more money on new tools and tech, and we brought in SDRs. So expenses have gone up by 40, 50%. Quota technically would be down. Mm-hmm. And you know what? About 24% of people hit quota now.
Yeah.
Down from 42% 10 years ago.
Yeah. Well, as I listen to you, I mean, themes like the fact that customers educate themselves much more before they ever talk to a salesperson. The old days, salespeople, an important role they played was the education of the customer. That shifted. The complexity of the buying cycle, where you have these complete committees and the business buyers, all that stuff. I agree. We hear that from so many people who join us. And I think you and I agree that for most enterprises, you know, AI in sales, because what you put on the table is companies, and again, we care about enterprise tech companies, they keep layering technology into the sales process or incremental roles into the sales process, trying to unlock value. And now AI comes along, and of course, they're going to layer AI into that, right? And that typically means, hey, guess what? You now have a co-pilot in your CRM, and you can write emails faster. And basically, you can create presentations faster. You can build a campaign faster. In other words, all the crap you were doing before, which I think what you're chipping on is becoming less effective, we just enabled you to do that faster or to do more of it. That's sort of the general approach that we see here. And so your argument is that's not real change. That's the opposite of change. So when you say AI is truly genuinely changing B2B enterprise sales, what's the real shift that you see?
Bill Gates said, if you improve a bad process, your demise comes faster.
Yeah.
And this is what's happening today is you've got this Jenga stack that has sort of been cobbled together, and it's not AI. Me putting a ChatGPT wrapper on Salesforce is Salesforce with a chatbot. It is not actually changing things. I think what we look back at, as we said, is who's in charge? Who makes the decisions? Who is the person who can actually commit?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the buyer.
Yeah.
And look, your audience probably has this experience. If you've ever used MapQuest, you know, and I'm that old, you know what the driver-centric view is. I'm going to get the shortest route. I'm going to print it out, and I'm going to follow that route. And if there's an accident on that day, my bad.
Right.
Waze changed it because it said, instead of me trying to follow you, what I want to do is learn from the drivers ahead of you. The roads are constantly changing. Shortcuts are constantly being found. Why is it that I can't extrapolate those insights and make everyone's experience better? And this is what we learned about sales, which is when you join Collective Eye, you're joining a network model.
Mm-hmm.
We're studying an externality. Everyone thinks, oh, I'm going to layer some kind of AI on my data. Great. What have you learned? Nothing about the buyer.
Mm-hmm.
You've learned about how you sold, which you already knew. Mm-hmm. What I want to do with Collective Eye and what we do every single day for our customers, and what wins is, I want to know how this particular buyer is buying, with whom, how do they make decisions, what matters to them, do they have a bias to the incumbent, or do they love new things?
Mm-hmm.
What's the language I should use, early adopter or late adopter? I want to know what their committee is. How long does it take for them to buy something? I need to know how to work within their process.
Mm-hmm.
I can talk about my sales process all day long, but it doesn't matter. And every great seller will tell you, your playbook is thrown away as soon as the buyer wants to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
No one's going to buy the way we want to sell. They want to buy the way they want to buy. That's why I don't go to a steakhouse that tells me how my meat's going to get prepared. Nobody wants to be told what to do, least of all the person who's writing the check. And I think that's the big change in the world is once you realize I can learn from everyone who sold to this person before you, I can guide you through the next sale and make it seem easy. And that's what we do.
Yeah. So let's click into that. And I want to play back here the shift in the modeling. So it's number one. You can take AI and you can, and we have members that do this all the time, and it is a good thing to do. You can model things like renewal risk based on how a customer is behaving with the information within your systems, right? You can model things like that that are very helpful, but you're looking at what's available in your systems. I want to test this with you. When you talk about modeling the buyer, their preferences between new versus incumbent, their preferences, you know, whatever those preferences are and how they've bought historically, tell me the data that you're drawing on to build that model for your customers, just so they understand that.
When our customers join, first of all, it only takes about 45 minutes. We're just connecting to the APIs of the systems they already have, email, calendar, phone, video conference, whatever it is they're using. Those are the communications tools that are allowing us to follow them. We do all the work then to clean up that data. We do all the work to capture all the missing activities. We add the missing buying team members that never get in your CRM. We add the missing selling team members. Most of these tools that have been built for sales are designed for the sales org, but you don't win a deal with the sales org. You win a deal with client success who comes in and helps you out, with finance who helps you with pricing, with your technical advisor who's answering questions on behalf of the customer. You have a group of teams that are coming from all different functions to help you get this deal done, but they're not in your system. We do this by making sure that all those communications are captured so we even know which of the lawyers were at it. Because if you get the wrong lawyer, that could be three turns of a document, not one. And we need to understand on all the transactions that we're working on, how does that work? Now, you give us that set of data, but I've got thousands of other customers who are all contributing the same thing. So when we see the same buyers at the same orgs, we're now able to understand that process across all the different purchases they're making. And we're observing them all the time.
So again, let me just test on this for members who are pretty savvy in terms of how they think about their modeling on stuff like this. So you get into their systems and you understand whatever data you have on that customer. Again, if you have a gong call that's recorded, you have interactions there, you have information in your CRM, whatever it is, right? But there are other sources about that same customer. And I'm going to guess part of them could be in the public domain that you can draw on. Part of it could be how they're interacting with another enterprise in terms of their behaviors there. And you're bringing all that together to model what you're basically going to assert is a more accurate view of how that customer behaves in the buying process. Is that fair?
That's 100% right. In fact, we have all the data that's out there. The cool thing about neural nets are you're talking about billions of parameters coming into the model. So everything from the Strait of Hormuz, inflation, down to your deal. But even things like understanding when someone says, this is great, I'll get back to you. There are key phrases of that particular person that can be indicative. I'll give a piece of information I've never shared before. And if you want, I'll give you two that your audience may never know.
Okay.
Did you know that today, because buying has become a political process, that your buyer, and we've learned this now from watching 10 years of transactions, your buyer will choose the group that they want to come in to review the product based on if they want to buy it or not. They'll have one group of people that they know will reject it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have another group of people that they'll bring in that they know will accept it. And you don't know. You think things are going well because they're bringing five people to a meeting. Well, they've found a way to politically have it killed by looking like they wanted to do the deal.
Yeah.
Because if it ever comes back where the CEO says, why did you pick these people? Say, look, I didn't want to. I brought it to John, Frank, and Mary, and John, Frank, and Mary just hated it. And I felt like we weren't going to be able to get this to work without their support. Now, they knew that in advance.
Yeah.
Because they would have brought in Harry, Sam, and Steve if they thought they wanted to buy it. You just didn't know it, but we did.
Yeah.
That's an example.
Yeah. Well, I mean, did you have another one you want to throw on the table before I interrupt you there?
Look, I'll give you one that's probably the most interesting thing we've discovered recently. We haven't written about this yet, so this is only for your audience. I will write about it shortly, but you know your audience gets things that most people don't. And here's what I'll tell you. We discovered this about 5 years ago, and we call the concept sequencing. So oftentimes, This comes out from your sales team as sayings that are like buyers lie, which I'm sure you've heard this saying before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They don't lie. What it is they don't always have information from inside their org. So let me explain what a sequence is. It all starts with an anchor transaction. And I'm going to give an example of an anchor transaction. The company decides it wants to open 1 million square feet of office in Columbus, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So that anchor transaction is the lease. Now there's a team probably in facilities working with a set of lawyers covering where are we going to be, what's the lease, well, what's the rate we're going to do for how long, et cetera. And those are complicated arrangements. Those are typically 10 to 20 year deals. These can be very expensive deals to get done. And they're going to go in and negotiate that lease. There's going to be brokers involved. There's going to be a lot of things happening. Now, the rest of the org has to be prepared for when that lease will get done. So let's say I expect the lease to be done August 30th. Do I start the process of getting ready for that August 30th or do I do it before? Well, there's going to be a group that's going to want to do a build out. They're going to be interviewing general contractors, architects, and other people. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a group that's going to need computers. That's going to be in IT. They're going to start to figure out what kind of networking do we have? What kind of security do we need to put in place? How many computers do we want? On what kind of desks? With what kind of monitors? They're going to start the process of bidding that out. You're going to start to have everything from insurance to food supplies to you name it, security and other things. And those are going to be done by each different function.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they have a timeline of when they need to get it done by. But what happens if that lease falls apart? They thought they had deal terms. The owner of the property pushes back because they found a different bidder. And now they're changing it. And all of a sudden, that deal gets pushed back. Every one of those other buyers may not even know for weeks. For all we know, the company's still negotiating. For all we know, they're trying to figure out what alternatives they may have. They probably are so busy on trying to get that deal done that they are not doing a weekly update for all the other people. So when that contract gets pushed back for contracting, when the insurance deal doesn't get done, when the computers don't get purchased, even though everyone had a price based on August 30th, that's because they find out later on that a sequence that happened before them slowed them down. And this happens in almost every transaction. You just don't know because you're thinking, I'm the center of the universe. And my deal is the important deal. And I know how to sell to this person. And I've done my BANT, medic, whatever. I've done everything right. And I've gotten commitment. I don't know what happened. And that's what's happened. Is something else triggered some other change that rippled through the whole org. These are two examples. I could give you 50.
So as I listen to you, and my assumption there is on sequencing, is that you want to have intelligence and models that basically are able to alert a company to say, look, you were, you know, yeah, maybe I'm the IT company or I'm an IT provider providing just the computers and the monitors and everything else. And there is an issue further upstream in the sequence that you need to be aware of. And you want to basically say, hey, just like you said, and by the way, you were going to present on what monitors and PCs you're selling. What group did you present to, A or B? Those are the things that you're informing your customers on as they're going through the, I have that right. So
you have it right. In fact, I would argue if you're not listening to your customer because you're not a part of a network like Collective Eye, you're really going in blind and then you're constantly surprised and you can blame the customer. But reality is you've chosen not to turn Waze on. In my example, if you've chosen not to know there's accidents at, don't get angry when you get stuck in it.
You and I are very sympathetic on this because I believe what you are articulating is the future of selling for sure. Because again, not to beat a dead horse here, but the traditional sales motion of salespeople, like you say, talking to a particular buyer, pitching, going back to their boss and going, man, that was a really good meeting. I feel really good about that. Put it on the forecast or I don't feel good. It's not, all of that is going to look archaic. And it's not going to take 5 or 10 years for it to look archaic. Your point is it's archaic now. It's already archaic. So I'm very sympathetic on this. And I'm curious, you know, because again, now you have this intelligence and it is trained on the customer and you're working a deal. How is this model informing and who is it informing? Is it targeted at the salesperson working the deal? Is it targeted at management? And how is it informing it as things are going? Is it like alert-based, or are they querying to say, hey, here's where I'm at, what should I do? Just give people a sense of how they're interacting to get the intelligence out of the platform.
So let's start with the first mind shift that AI does, which is today, productivity in sales is at best 30%. Mm-hmm. What are they doing today? Well, one, context switching. Constantly from deal to deal to deal. Some deals are in closing, so they're trying to do contracting. Others are at RFP stage, so they're trying to fill out RFPs. And others are cold calling. I mean, this is the job where context switching is crazy. And it takes on average 20 minutes for someone who's doing context switching to fully bring their brain into the next thing they're doing. Yeah. But it's worse than that. Because not only are we context switching between customers, the sales stack is 15 to 30 tools. Mm-hmm. So to get the basic information that people are trying to do their job, they're going into 15 to 30 tools and context switching there.
Yeah.
It's no wonder people get superficial things from sales. So our job and the first thing we do is to get rid of all of that. How do we do that? Well, one, there is no forecasting in our world. Forecast Friday is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. And I'm sorry, I've been in sales for 30 years. It is the stupidest thing that has ever existed. And if people were honest about the process, they would first start up by saying no humans ever predicted any future. And the idea of giving up 20% productivity to pick a number by trying to predict next week, let alone next month, is insane. Yeah. There is no win rate that offsets that lack of productivity.
Yeah.
And I know people say it's about accountability. It's not, because every week, if you look at the win rates and how accurate they were, they would have fired everyone. There'd be no one left. No one can pick stocks. They can't pick which deals are going to win.
Yeah.
But you have to have these things. That doesn't mean you say, okay, I can't do a forecast. Yes, there are ways of doing it. Google Maps or Waze gives you an estimated arrival, but what does it do? It updates every single day. Mm-hmm. It updates every minute as you're driving. It learns from everyone that's out there so you can adjust if the world around you is adjusting. So the first thing we do is we eliminate all the things that used to take time. There's no logging of activities anymore. Mm-hmm. There's no pipeline review. The AI does a review every day so I can see what changed from yesterday. There's no forecast. I give you a daily forecast without any people. So I take someone the day we go live. It's 45 minutes to connect. Mm-hmm. The next day, I take someone from 30% productivity to 80%. But the bigger thing is I'm expanding beyond sales. I'm trying to hold the whole org accountable. If our lawyer takes 2 weeks to return red lines, that's part of the reason why I might not make my number. Everybody needs to know that this lawyer took 2 weeks. Today, that sits quietly hidden because it's not in CRM, because lawyers don't use CRM.
Right.
Nobody knows. And if I'm the rat who calls out the GC and says, it's because of him, what happens to my next deal? So I sit quietly and suffer.
Yep.
No, in my world, everybody sees what's going on. Everybody knows who's involved in that deal. So we hold everyone accountable. Everyone's able to follow. Think about how much productivity time is lost with the what's up with.
Mm-hmm.
How many calls do you get during the day? I need an update. Not anymore. Everybody can see what's going on. Everyone can see an independent set of odds to know if you're likely to win the deal or not, so that if the deal goes south, everyone knows it wasn't you being wrong. You can all see every day. So who uses it? Leaders, every department head, marketing should see which people need help, what are the things they're asking every week, and sales professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And what they get is everything in one place. There's no need for a stack. This is a system of intelligence, unlimited contacts. I don't need to go to Zoom or Seamless. Mm-hmm. I get something called connectors, so I don't need LinkedIn, which everyone's connected, but no one actually knows each other. No, connectors tells me how well do these people actually know each other. So I can start to navigate the org if I need to find it. I can find out if a board member of mine is friends with their CEO, and I don't even have to ask them. It shows me who knows them. I can find out how to win this deal just by asking. We have a chatbot called Telly that connects to our AI. And it says, for this customer, based on what you're selling, here's what you should be doing. Here's the words you should use. Here's how to actually understand what they care about. And these are the things that are their touch points today. Incorporate this, and you'll actually matter to them. And all of this is built right into one system. From forecasting to win, we literally help you do everything, but the AI is doing the work. And then lastly, you can build your own agents. If this person hasn't gotten back, if the lawyer hasn't done the red lines, I want you to escalate it automatically, and an agent will go reach out and escalate it on your behalf. So you can spend your time doing what you're doing great instead of all this admin work that takes me away from actually revenue. This is sort of the AI switch.
Yeah. So I want to play back several things you put on the table here and ask you some follow-up questions around it. And I want to start with forecasting. I'll tell you for myself personally, the first time I got involved in actual deal forecasting early in my career, and I was junior, I was dealing with more senior salespeople. I realized that the way that that game is played, right? So let's say you're nut for the month. We'll keep it simple. It's like, you know, $1 million. And your boss is saying, are we going to get the million or not? And you're saying, you know, yeah, I think we're good. And you're looking, let's say, at 10 deals to make up. And what you're really doing is like a portfolio. And you're saying, well, this deal I feel good about, but if it falls through, I'll really go to that deal. But if that pops surprisingly, I'll go to that deal. So the bottom line is, when somebody accurately says, yeah, I'm going to hit the million, and they do, how they actually got there, they had no effing clue. They didn't. So that is a complete misnomer. Oh, that person's really good at forecasting. No, they just had enough stocks in play, if you will, right? They had a big enough portfolio to choose from. And to your point, as things get tougher and the portfolio of opportunities might be smaller, especially for a lot of enterprise tech companies, it's harder to play that game. And so forecasting really is something that quite frankly, is a farce. So I agree with that. I think there's a lot of wasted time.
I like what you just said. You called it a game.
Yeah, for sure.
Everybody calls it a game.
Yeah. It's
the only one who doesn't call it a game is the CFO who's got to figure out what the hell to keep the company afloat.
Yeah, exactly.
But we in sales, everybody knows everyone's manipulating everyone, and they go and spend all day doing it.
Yeah, and deep down, they know they really don't know. To your point, like with this customer, I think they might pop this month, but I really don't know. So I'm placing guesses. And I want to pause on just forecasting. So as you are on this journey trying to shift the mentality of how people think about sales, just roughly, what percentage of enterprise sales organizations you're dealing with has the light bulb gone off that the way they do forecasting truly does not make sense anymore? Just roughly, what percentage is there?
I would say when we go in and sell, most of the time when we get our business in, people think the forecasting thing is going to be, I don't really believe it. So I'm buying it for the other stuff. I want to know about my buyer. Yeah. But that there's no way that you can do a forecast better than me.
Right.
I've been in this industry for 30 years. I know. And within the first week, I'm blowing them away.
Yeah,
I'm always better than that.
Yeah.
And my team is usually in there saying, it's costing you 20% productivity. You need to stop this. Mm-hmm. But they'll usually go for a month or two, or even sometimes 3 months, where they think it's a motion that you're supposed to do. It's hard to let go.
Hard to let
it's
that go.
It's a feeling of power. We would argue that as an AI-first org, that is the sign when you let go of it that you're ready to actually do something. Because if you think about the forecast, I'm going to layer one thing on. And I would argue there's a reason why CROs are no longer becoming CEOs. And it's things like forecasting. People get upset when I say forecasting should go away. But I'm actually trying to help people get into the CEO seat. And the reason is, if everything is qualitative, which is what forecasting is, you'll never be in a CEO role, which is a pure quant role. It's all data-driven. Sales is the last place where data-driven is driving things. And you know that because, is there any other function that sits in on your forecast meeting? Does your CFO give a 10% haircut to whatever number you give? You are not believed. You will never be CEO. You are not a power player. And CROs need to stop thinking they're an island. So I will tell you this. Here is what we know about AI-first companies. If I do the traditional forecast by the end of that Friday, where we've negotiated, manipulated, pick your word. I end up with a number that I give my CFO and I think my day is done. In an AI-first org, you start in the morning with how your forecast has changed from the prior day. And then we point you to do which deals have improved and declined. The idea is, like when Google Maps tells you that there's an accident ahead, if you take no action, you will end up in the accident.
Right.
The goal is not to tell you there's an accident. The goal is to reroute you. Yep. What we're doing by giving you your number in the morning is now you have all day to reroute. In the traditional forecast, I've returned a number, but it's unactionable information. I've done nothing. So I lost 20% productivity. I improved nothing. And by the time I arrive on Monday, it's useless. I always point this out. When did Silicon Valley Bank blow up? Thursday night. Friday, we had a banking crisis and they were doing their, I don't know what's going to happen guessing game. They reported it Friday night. And what happened Sunday? The federal government saved Silicon Valley Bank. So by the time Monday arrived, the entire day on Friday had been wasted on speculation that was unactionable and relatively useless information. If they had used us Saturday morning, they would have seen. Sunday, they would have seen. Monday, they would have seen. Tuesday, they would have seen. And they would have been talking which deals were affected. That's the difference between AI first is you start with the answer and you move to action. This is something that sales has never experienced.
And I love this analogy of Waze because I think it's something that people can get immediately. I mean, the concept of avoiding the traffic, starting to reroute. The other thing I want to react to is your comment about unactionable information. I think the other reality in the sales process with forecasting, right? So let's say that my nut is $1 million. I was counting on this one deal to make up 30% of it and they went dark on me, right? It goes south. But we really need that deal. Okay, so now suddenly it went dark. They're not responding. I do not have any of this greater context of why, to your point. So I'm now in the middle of the accident is basically the deal, right? I'm now in the middle of the accident. What is the reaction of management? And any person who's managed a deal can feel this pain. Well, it's like, let's run all the plays we've always run, just louder, faster, harder. So call them up again. Send them another email. Try to get their boss on the phone. Maybe let's throw a discount. I mean, because again, they don't know how big the accident is, right? They don't know what they're dealing with. They're just throwing anything up against the wall, which are sort of traditional tactics, which we all know typically do not move the deal. Again, if the highway's jammed and a semi is over, you're not going anywhere. So I don't care how much you sit there and rev your engine, you ain't going anywhere. So I think that's another great analogy for organizations to think about how massive this paradigm shift is in terms of how you're operating. And the other thing I want to put on the table, because you were talking about context switching and the productivity of salespeople. So I don't know, about a year and a half ago when AI was just rolling out, we were doing analysis on how it could impact different roles. And so I did analysis specifically on account executives. And what we found was basically what you're saying, majority of their time is not selling, right? A majority of their time is context, administrative, building. So we said, look, the good news is there's no doubt AI is going to make a bunch of that shit a lot easier. So you are going to free up a lot more cycles for these salespeople to be more strategic, to actually, quote, sell. What we didn't chip on that article, which is what you're putting on the table, it is begging this question of if the mundane, you know, administrative, tactical crap gets worked out, what do you want those people to do? And what you're saying is I want them to be reading the context. I want them to be getting ahead of the accidents. That's what a strategic seller is doing in 2026 or 2027. Not more cold calls. Not, oh, instead of doing one presentation, I can build five today. It's not more of the same old shit. I mean, I think that's a really sort of important thing you're putting on the table here. And I don't feel that light bulb has gone off in enterprise sales yet.
Look, you will always spot a CRM first seller or CRM first org when they start with top of funnel. Leads. I need to get more leads. It's always the Glengarry leads that are going to change everything if they could just get more of them. And of course, anyone who's that worried about leads means everything's just falling through the net. Like it's literally just going through the bucket and nothing is staying there. And they're burning through leads faster, which means they're burning through customers faster than anything else. This org that is still living in the 1970s, they're still thinking about the world as a funnel. And they're thinking if a funnel's wider and they just can't figure out why it's getting tighter and tighter at the bottom. And they're just burning through everything that's possible. And then they're churning out. AI first is a totally different mentality. I think you gave a good example. What happens is when those deals start falling off, what else is happening, Thomas, that you didn't share was that people start hiding deals.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
And the reason they hide deals are because they're like, well, let's pull this one forward by giving them a discount. And the person's thinking, well, that's going to be 10% harder for me to make my quota, or that was next quarter. How am I going to do that? And so all of a sudden, you have this information brokerage world.
Yeah.
And the reason is the kind of things you're getting when they're throwing those plays of like, do discounts, do this, is because they don't know the deal. You're going to leaders who are not a part of the process. I would argue middle managers, all the way up to the CRO, are bystanders.
Mm-hmm.
They hold no accountability, and we should be holding them accountable. Half those middle managers are managing up.
Mm-hmm.
And then what they're doing is drive-bys. They'll say, Thomas, tell me what's going on with this deal. And you'll give a very short version because you're hoping to be able to get back to work.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll start then digging it, and then they'll start throwing off-the-cuff backseat driver stuff at you.
Right.
And you're thinking to yourself, thanks, genius. You know, like, I didn't think about the obvious discount, but if I do that, I got to find another deal. And so you're trying to figure out how to balance this stuff and also not burn your reputation or burn your relationship. And so it's not their fault. They know nothing about the deal because nothing's in CRM. It never is.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's in your other systems. And it's even worse now because if they go into things like Gong, you're afraid that they're going to look and say, you spoke too long.
Right. Right.
Or you didn't answer the question exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And these are things that nobody would want to do anymore. In fact, I would blame conversational intelligence as one of the main reasons why win rates are going down, because everyone's becoming a script reader, even though everyone's asking different questions, because they're mm-hmm. so afraid that they're going to get called out on saying the wrong thing that they're just trained to be monkeys. Mm-hmm. And here's the deal about AI. I'll give you another little secret. Thomas, only you get this stuff. Honestly, I would never give this to other people. Your audience gets stuff out of me. I don't know why I share this stuff, because this is stuff that costs us a lot of time and money to get to. But I'll give you an example. AI cannot function with tools like that. It mm-hmm. needs variability. AI is Darwinian. Do you remember the old days of sales before all these tools got in there? Every sales guy was taught to sell into their strengths, mm-hmm. become the seller you were meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Learn your style, learn how to build relationships, mm-hmm. talk about products. And what would happen is they would share what they learned in the market. They would say, I now talk about it this way. I find they ask these questions. And then sellers would share what they learned and get better at selling together. Not today. You use a conversational intelligence tool, they'll say, we had a playbook. You did not say exactly what you were supposed to say. And AI needs that variability to learn which one's actually working so that mm-hmm. it can recommend the best thing. Mm-hmm. In fact, I would argue conversational intelligence is the first thing you should probably pull out. You should record calls, but don't use it as a way to punish people for mm-hmm. trying to respond to what someone's asking in a new way. The world's constantly evolving. Mm-hmm. What worked a month ago will not work today because your competitor has already responded to it. Maybe they have a new feature. Maybe they've got a new messaging. And you're still using the old messaging because you're afraid that you're going to get called out on it.
Yeah.
So this is the stuff that we see that's very much changing in the marketplace. But it's there's AI first, and then there's like the old way.
Yeah. Well, you know, a thread that you're on there, which again is super important for our audience, it's something we've talked about previously in terms of how people think about AI. And there's two sides of the coin of using AI. There's the concept of AI for efficiency, so AI efficiencies. And then there's AI creating creative opportunity. And what I heard you just say, which is really important, is if you take something like capturing conversations, et cetera, and your lens is strictly efficiency, which is I want all my salespeople to be efficient and use the same terminology and blah, 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 and I'm going to use this tool as a hammer to drive efficiency, okay. But what you're saying is, no. The play here is the creative opportunity, because let's learn what's working, what's not working. Embrace the diversity, and AI can model that way faster. And then when you learn the best tricks, yes, train all the salespeople and say, look, that's what the messaging that's working. This is what this type of customer responds to. But it's a completely different mentality on how you are going to leverage this new technology. And I think right now the industry is so weighted on the efficiency side that they're losing the opportunities, the creative side.
I think this changes when you start focusing on your buyer, because even sellers, even sales leaders, you're a chief commercial officer, you're a chief revenue officer, you are still buying things. And when you have to buy and experience the other company doing what you're doing to other people, Yeah. Right? I always like to say cadence tools were only cadence tools to the person sending it. To everybody else, it was spam.
Yeah.
Do you know what, because we study all the, we're a quant shop. Do you know what the most common email that came in the sixth in the sequence was?
What?
I know you haven't read the prior five emails, so I hope you read this one so you can let me know if this is of interest.
Right.
Do you know what it means that that's the most common? Yeah. It means that the presumption is I spammed you with five emails to fill your inbox that annoyed you, but I'm going to send you a sixth to make sure you knew. And somebody must have read it on some blog and thought this was a genius idea because it was literally across everyone. And when you shut that off, what we found is if you look at inbound, inbound's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Gone. Auto dialers, gone. Nobody answers their phone anymore. Mm-hmm. This is why I said we're AI-centric and AI-first companies are always thinking about their buyer. Mm-hmm. Instead of number of activities, which is, again, that big funnel, which is essentially not even a funnel anymore. It's basically this, right? Yeah. Where nothing gets through.
Great thing.
Yeah, I just bombard and bother people forever. So what if you think about your buyer first, what you're really thinking about is first, how do I take away all that wasted time? Second thing is a system of intelligence, which is an AI product like Collective Eye, has everything in one place so that I can just ask the AI, what do I do? How do I help? And it has everything from the context to relationships. And it's thinking about a strategy that it can work with you on. But you now have the time to execute on it. Sales has become so transactional that the trust part of it is gone. The relationship part of it. Sales should be telling their partners when there's an opportunity at another company. Sales should be telling them what they're hearing from the market. I need to be valuable to my buyer. I need to be bringing things to them. If I can't bring them something, why are they talking to me? They can get the pricing from the website. They get all their information from the website. Are they there just to suffer me? No, they want to build a relationship. Most of our friends should be the people we do business with. And that's why they give us second and third chances when something gets messed up or breaks down, or if our price is a little high, they call us up because we've taken the time to build a relationship and say, I will take care of you. And that doesn't happen if you're doing high velocity.
No, not at all. I mean, it is such a different world. So I have to ask you for the leaders out there, whether it's sales leaders, whether they're in the C-suite and they're listening in this conversation. And one thing I'm sure, just like, why don't they give up their forecasts? Why don't they give up their outbound, you know, emails and auto dialers? Why? Because they're like, oh my God, that's what I know. That's the fear, right? So, you know, it's going to be next Monday morning. You want them to come into the office and think differently about how they're approaching sales. Where should they start? What is the beginning of that journey for them to help them start this shift?
There's two ways to do it. If you're really apprehensive, very conservative, or nervous, go to my blog, reloadnyc.com, reloadnyc.com. Look, you can read my articles. I explain in great detail why it's changing, what the mentality is, how there's a trade-off and what those trade-offs are. And statistically, I show exactly the math. That's one way if you're really conservative.
So educate
I would
yourself.
Recommend I would recommend the better way, which is look, I take 45 minutes to go live. I give people 14 days to try the product. You can cancel for free. Until you see that it can actually do what we're claiming, you won't be able to start the transition. And I think about all the retailers who are like, I'm not going to have a web store because I know how to run a store and how big could the web be? This stuff isn't hard. In fact, it sort of presents itself to you. I would imagine when Waze came out, there were a bunch of taxi drivers who resisted it because they're like, I know the roads. This is my skill. That is not a skill. Whether you hold on to it or not, Uber was coming for your business because somebody else just needed Waze to know the best route. What became the skill was everything else. It was so much more pleasurable. I think this is a lot easier for people if they just stop trying to explain to me why the old stuff is working, even though every stat, there is not a single stat that improved over the last 15 years. You can continue to do what you're doing and I will work with your successor. That's the reality. I would recommend learning, just asking. You don't have to show me you're great at this stuff. I know you're great at the old stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to walk you through the logic of it so you can see it for yourself and realize the job you actually signed up for, which is to be a great leader, to grow your group of people into good human beings, to be the coach that we're supposed to be, the leader we're supposed to be, is what we're bringing you. Because that's not what you're doing today. Today, you're managing expectations, you're dealing with information brokers, and you're trying to make sure that something doesn't surprise you where you get fired. That's no way to live. We change organizations overnight, but you have to be willing to take the first step. And I'll tell you, Thomas, one thing which is interesting to me. I will see a lot of CROs say, I want my ops team to look at it. Mm-hmm. And that alone is a problem.
Yeah.
The ops team looks at something like me where the AI can answer every question and thinks to themselves, what do I do? And I actually think they should be agent builders. I think the perfect person to do it, and I think it's a cost center role. They don't have a number. They sort of try to manage this Jenga system that's always breaking, and Salesforce is every 2 years going through a redo, and they're always building projects. No, I want revenue. Everybody should have a number in sales. There should be no people with exception. And I think that what happens is, if you want to try it, connect your systems. We're SOC 2, we're GDPR compliant. I work in the biggest companies in the world. I work with Fortune 10s. Try it and then make your decision. Don't ask people what they think. Look at it and say, did it do what it's supposed to do? And I think that's the first step. I'll give the example, because you can tell I spend a lot of time with people who really struggle, and they struggle the hardest way possible. They will spend months deciding, will this work for me? Having never used an AI product other than maybe ChatGPT.
Yeah.
As opposed to spending 45 minutes connecting and seeing it, does it work? That's not an AI first mentality. An AI first mentality is we can move fast. There's no projects in AI world. It works or it doesn't. When you tried ChatGPT or Claude, the first time you typed it in, it either gave you a good answer or it didn't. You learned how to work better and better with it over the span of years. And this is what we're recommending to people, which is, don't try to judge, don't try to guess, don't try to ask, would we? Just get started. And I think if you do that, you'll change.
And I have to react to your comment about, well, I'm going to have my ops team look at it. The things that we've been talking here today, again, this is at the pinnacle of strategy. It's a pinnacle philosophy of how you're going to drive revenue and sales. And so if you think that that's something your ops team should be looking at and deciding, and you're a CRO or sales EVP or whatever, you're effing insane. I'm sorry. That is not something that should be relegated there. If you are a revenue leader, you have to be understanding what we're talking about here today. You have to get your hands on this. You have to be thinking about what this means in terms of how you operate differently. It is a leadership discussion. This is not a technology discussion. This is not a process workflow discussion at all. So I think that's, you know, it's an important point that you made there. I mean, I really enjoyed the conversation. Again, we're very simpatico. This is all the right squares. I think the way people manage revenue is going to dramatically change. And this is not going to take, again, 5 or 7 or 10 years. This is happening right now. To your point, the technology is there already. It's a question of leveraging it. It's a question of changing your philosophy around how you approach revenue. So I really appreciate you providing those insights. And I always end with a question of the day for our audience. And so my question for folks is, your model-driven revenue engine still pointed at your sellers, or have you finally flipped the instrument and pointed at your buyers? Cheers, everybody.